You're listening to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast from Misadventures of an Adoptive Dad.
Well, hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm fine. Look at you all tanned and stunning after your big holly bobs.
Holly bobs. I can't be tanned. It must be some sort of filter on the screen.
No, you can't. No. Yeah, it must be. Did you not go out in the sun then, no?
No, I refuse to go out in the sun.
Okay. That's interesting.
No, I just...
No boat trips or anything like that, no?
You're saying that, but I refuse to go on a boat trip. It was only 20 minutes across the bay, and then we got it free. And Paula took the kids and Anne, a queenie, and I said, I'm just not doing it. I'll get seasick. I'll be sick forever. And she said, oh, fair enough. And then after 10 minutes, the weather turned bad, and I got this text saying, I'm going to die.
Oh, no.
Sat in a cafe, all sophisticated and that, drinking coffee. I was quite pleased myself. She wasn't impressed, though.
I bet you were. Yes. I bet you were. Yeah.
And you had a holiday.
But you
too.
Had a good holiday.
Yeah, it was a very good holiday.
I did, yes. I did have a holiday. Good. It looked good from what I saw.
It did. I read a book.
Yeah, I've been away.
Did you read any books?
Did you only read one?
I read two.
Is that all the time managed? No, I didn't. I was too busy driving. Go on.
Well, I read two and a half. I read one as research, and it literally, I couldn't sleep. I was so angry. So I'm not going to say what book that was.
Oh, okay.
But maybe good things will come out of that. And that's the blog that I wrote about fostering came out of it. Languishing in care. I was incandescent rage. I was stomping up and down beside the pool going, and Paul's going, oh, whatever. Mm-hmm. Pass me the wine.
Yeah, she's going, oh, what's he read? What's he read?
But that links us nicely into Foster Care Fortnight.
Yeah, I know. Yes. Why do they have a fortnight?
Because I think they're special.
Is it Ryan? Is it because it's the two Fs? That's probably why, isn't it?
Foster Care Fortnight. I think they probably pay more to get a fortnight. I don't know who you pay.
No, I don't know. But anyway, yes, it is Foster Care Fortnight.
The random musings of you and I.
But what does but what does Foster Fortnight mean? That's what I'd like to know. Go on, you know, because you do all the stuff.
I think it's basically organised by the Fostering Network, and they use it as an opportunity to promote the benefits of fostering, do a bit of, probably recruitment, but also to kind of raise the profile, do you think? You've been a foster carer, Scott, haven't you?
I know, but... Well, yeah, I kind of went wrong when we adopted the first child that we ever had placed with us. I kind of knocked that one in the head fairly quickly.
Well, I see a theme developing between us. But why did you become a foster carer? I'm interested.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you'd adopted, hadn't you?
Yeah, for a long time, actually. What was that? That must have been... Yeah, we'd had the boy 7 years, so it wasn't, you know, the short period after that. And if I'm honest, I don't know. I think that I wanted more children, but I wasn't sure about adopting more children, if that makes sense.
Right. So you were going for the try before you buy option.
Long term. Oh, no, that's not a nice thing to say. But I think as well, because I didn't work then, and that's key, actually. I didn't work. And the boys were coming to kind of midway through their high school careers. And I was thinking, okay, what can I do now that actually I can use, you know, talents that I have? And, you know, we've been reasonably successful with children who've come from the kind of backgrounds that the boys came from.
So you had those skills.
How can I use
set.
That in something else?
Yeah.
I thought I did. Or we did, should I say.
And were there any barriers to you becoming foster carers? Because obviously you were a same-sex couple.
No, we didn't. And it's funny because I see that kind of comment and question asked a lot these days. And I still see people coming up against barriers where that's concerned. And for us, there was never any issue. You know, we were accepted straight away by the private agency that we applied to. The social worker was very kind of on the ball with everything. She was more kind of focused on the older two boys and how it would affect them. Everything just from start to finish, it was your typical standard, in my eyes, your typical standard kind of fostering assessment to approval. There was never any question raised about the fact that, you know, we couldn't do it or that we shouldn't do it. It was just all very positive from start to finish.
What were you approved for?
So we never came across anything like that. Well, we were approved from 5 to 18. One or two, I think. Kind of, oh, God, it's a couple of years ago now, but I think it was 5 to 18. And we definitely did not want a child, and this is no offence to any teenagers who may, unlikely, but maybe listen, we didn't want anything close to the age of the boys, because obviously they were teenagers and weren't sure how that was going to progress.
Well, that's a reasonable request.
Between 5 and kind of 10.
Yeah, it's reasonable to ask.
I think so. But we came unusually, actually, because I didn't think I'd be like this, but I was very kind of sure of the fact that we couldn't do that. It needed to be much younger. So it was, you know, when you kind of are approached about children for adoption and you kind of, especially when you're first approved, you're very wary about saying no, because you do feel like that maybe the sometimes you feel that may be the kind of only option to look into. With this, it was rude. It was very, okay, no, it's just not right for us. It does not feel right. It's just not the way we envisaged our fostering career. So, I think we had 5 or 6 calls for teenagers. And it was just a no from the off. It really was.
That's interesting. I mean, I think it's not an unusual route, is it, for adopters to kind of, things tick along and a few years later, because that's exactly our stories that, 6 years after children moved in, children were at a stage where Paula felt she had lots of more time and we had room, we had capacity. Let's do it. It's what we do. We've really enjoyed our lives with our children so far. But let's move on to that. And then our fostering process actually mirrored our adoption process. We were deferred at our first panel because they said that they were concerned that we would become attached to babies, which we said was ridiculous.
Oh, okay.
We said it was ridiculous. I was incandescent. I was like, what? That would never happen. Why would that happen? You know, I don't even like babies. And so they deferred us and went away and had a think about it. We went back to panel. We were approved. And then pretty quickly we were given a respite placement over a weekend of 2 little girls under 15 months, 2 little sisters. And that respite placement lasted a weekend, and then 4 weeks later they said, do you fancy having them? We said, yeah, but we're not approved for babies. And they went, nah, you'll be fine. And now they're 12 and 11. And,
and they're your babies.
Yeah, and every day I think they would. The perceptions of panels, I underestimate them consistently. They either really hit the nail on the head. If you have babies, you'll keep them. We go, no, and then we did. I'm such a hypocrite.
Well, it's so funny though, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure I know there is, because I've spoken to them, but I know there's foster carers who very much see it as a role they play in looking after children who come from care. They've got the skills and the techniques and all that sort of stuff to be able to go back to a birth family or onto adoption or onto long-term fostering or whatever. But I think that actually it's human nature at the end of the day, isn't it? You can't help that become attached to a being that you have responsibility for.
That's a really interesting point that you picked there.
With a child.
It's that responsibility, I think, that flicked the switch in me. And I think that when you make people responsible for someone, something, but on a very physiological, biological, primal level, these are my children now. And that's purely a human trait, isn't it? That we kind of, we feel the need to take responsibility for children. Some of us do. I mean, a lot of it I found really surprising, the experiences and the emotions that it brought up in me. How did you find fostering?
Difficult.
Right. Okay, now so moving on.
I didn't find it difficult. I think what I found was the lack of appreciation, and this may sound wrong, and if it does, then I do apologize, but the lack of appreciation that actually with our older two, in terms of what it was that with Jacob, because it was Jacob, that was it, throughout that time. And I got really frustrated at our supervisor and social worker constantly questioning, because we always had the answers and we were always doing the right thing by him, because at the end of the day it was about him. It wasn't about us, it was about him as a you know, a looked after child at that point. And it really used to frustrate me. So, you know, there's one thing that happened where she did her surprise visit, you know, that because 2 a year, is it 2 a year? Is that still 2 a year? Yeah.
Well, yeah. The law is 1 a year.
Shove the foot in the door and push the door open. Right. Okay.
Good practices too.
But she did one. Yeah, she did one in the first kind of 6 months. It's a way that it just felt so awkward, so false. Like she didn't really want to do it. She had to. I'm not so sure she had to kind of push her foot into the front door to.
Well, it's,
you know,
it's a
I wasn't
peculiar
going to slam
sensation.
The door in her face. You know, I was going to welcome her in because that's.
Yeah, I mean, I
Because you do this, don't you?
I do this. And unannounced visits are kind of this really peculiar thing because you know. The look on people's faces is just quite remarkable because the first response from people is, heck, I've forgotten a meeting. So they're kind of in their heads, they're going, were you due to be here? And then the second thought is, no, you're not due to be here. There's a problem. And and it happens in about 30 seconds.
You're checking up on me.
And the time I get to say, unannounced visit, don't worry. So you get all kinds of fun.
They're worrying,
Sometimes you get your tea as well, so that's quite nice. Cup of tea, biscuit. While people scoot round and pick up underwear off the floor and stuff.
God. I don't know what sort of houses you do with it.
Top children's underwear around the floor. You know,
But I think that's part of why I have a lot of respect for foster carers, actually, because they do put up with a lot. They really do.
Yeah.
Not only have they formed an attachment with a child, maybe even to a scenario that they don't actually agree with. So, you know, they may have been involved in contact and blah blah blah, and they may go on to adoption, they may not actually get on with the adoptive parents. It's all kind of commonly said stuff, isn't it, and on things like Twitter and blogs and things like that. But that's where I have the respect for them, because actually they do put up with a lot. And then to put on top of that, you know, when a child's first place, you've got to do daily reporting or weekly reporting. I can't remember which it was for
daily.
Us, but
it is daily now.
It was daily, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, that constant kind of, it's more than a full-time job for anybody to say, well, they need their heads tested, because there is no way that you could ever in this world pay the full worth of a foster carer with the kind of payments that are made, I don't think.
Yeah, and people get quite irate when those issues are written, where people say, well, actually foster carers are worth more money. They go, well, they should be doing it for love. Well, yeah, but they also need to put food on the tables.
Yeah. And interestingly, I was just going to say that foster carers are recognised as professionals in this country. I was at a thing yesterday with a senator from Australia. Interesting to me from
get
that
everywhere,
meeting.
Don't you?
I know, sorry, I'm not going to go on about it, but it was a really interesting discussion, because in Australia, foster carers aren't classed as anything. They're classed as just people who babysit. There's no kind of professional recognition. There's no, I know, and they get a payment for looking after a child, but there is no recognition of the work that they actually do. And I thought that was really interesting. On top of that, I also found really interesting, sorry, going back into adoption a little bit, but Australia, 200 adoptions in a big country like Australia every year.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Well, I know that. I know that to be true, and I think that the issue.
All right, so I'm not surprising you then.
All right, no, you're not.
I'm not surprising you by telling you
that. I'm sure literally everybody knows that, Scott. Are you the last person to find that out?
I didn't know that. Oh, shut up. No, I'm not the last person to know that. Thank you.
No, I think that they.
Evil.
No, they're culturally that they've got their social care system is very similar, but they're. Narratives and story around adoption are very different. They've got a very different experience when you think about the context of us sending children there and some of their very, very dubious, questionable history around Aboriginal children, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a real strong sense of we will not let this happen again. And that's totally appropriate. And we're on to adoption, and I want to stick on fostering. We could come back to that.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
no,
that's
fine.
You're fine. Yeah.
So I had an interview with my friend and your friend now, Blair, but the quality of the recording is a bit dubious in places. That was, I have to blame myself.
Sounds like you're in a bath.
Well, you know.
Technology.
What? Yeah. It's a bit poor. And I've had so shall we listen to what Blair has to say? Because Blair, as well as being an adoptee, is a foster carer. And he's also a foster carer social worker. He's a man with many hats.
He is. And I do like his stories. So let's listen. Let's have a listen.
Okay, we'll put it on and then we'll have a chat.
Hiya, Blair. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Al.
Excellent. And we last spoke to you about you being an adoptee, didn't we?
We did. Yeah, a while ago now.
Yeah. And you actually, I spoke to you since then, and you said that you had some interesting feedback about that, so I might as well talk to you about that before we get into fostering.
I did indeed. I mean, two things. First of all, it's the only time I've ever trended on Twitter, so thanks for that.
Excellent.
That was great. That's put up a mean celebrity. But I did get some feedback because lots of people are working with, but also those in the Adopt-Delix group that I run listen to the past and now enjoy a lot of what you do and a lot of the podcast. So it was interesting because the question was raised as to whether the experiences of adults adopted 30, 40 years ago really resonated with those adopted today. And it's just interesting because it gave us a lot to talk about in the group. And essentially I think we felt that the feelings are all the same, but the processes are very different.
Because I think when you talked about it, you were reflecting on the conversation that I think Scott and I had afterwards. I was saying how relevant are their views, which is kind of, I'm saying that out loud sometimes, but...
It's understandable, and particularly as, adopters, those raising children now, certainly the process is different. There's a lot of difference now in terms of, the amount of contact and the need and the expectation for contact, which didn't exist, of course, when we were growing up. And the nature of why children are adopted is different today as it was 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, society's changed and all that rationale behind adoption.
So there are many, many differences, essentially, I think I fed back to you that it was interesting because it sparked a lot of debate. And I don't think there's any real answers, but it was good because it got a conversation going.
That's brief. There wasn't a lynching, or they weren't after my address to come round and get me.
They enjoyed it. I think the conversation's been an important thing. I think it's good that they talk about it.
Yeah, and I think that secrecy is kind of the enemy of adoption.
Yeah, and just the fact that it's something that can't be spoken about or shouldn't be spoken about and shouldn't be normalised or acknowledged that everyone's different and people have different experiences growing up.
Yeah.
Families are very different and being adopted is different, and actually I think if you can talk about it, you can link with people, you can share your experiences, and even if you're having a negative and you're confused about your experience, certainly being able to talk about it will bring forward aspects to linking and realising that actually everyone's different and you're a situation of difference.
Yeah,
that made no sense, but it does.
I think what you mean. I mean, someone said to me once, I think it was on my preparation course for adoption, they said, there's no such thing as a straightforward adoption. And that's one of only two things I can remember from 18 years ago, but I think every day passing, I see that.
Probably the most important thing. Seems like a bit you remember.
Accept the fact that this is complex. Hey, well, that's great, thank you. And I think we could talk more and more. And I think the feedback I got was everyone was really, really intrigued and hung on every word you said. But I want to talk to you as well because there's more strings to your bow. You are a foster carer, aren't you?
I am.
Well, you are.
Arguably, my wife.
Careful what you say.
does most of it. Yeah, she's amazing. Now I sort of just turn up and have the jolly fun time. I know you've been doing it for a long time. Yeah, so I think it's about 19 years now.
How old are you when you started to be
I think around the age of, about 22, we had family friends in Newcastle who said a young man down to live with us for a while.
Right.
And I wanted to be a singer. And, and that was our first experience of kind of being responsible and looking after
another human.
He was 15, 16 when he came here. Spent a couple of years, 3 or 4 years with us. So, you know. And then we started to support our foster carers, friends of ours at foster, with the young people that they looked after.
Yeah.
So essentially we began.
So you were kind of like infiltrated by them.
So, and I think we became foster carers when we were about 24.
That's really, that is young.
Wow, that's really young.
Because we're both social workers and we both work in fostering, and I
don't
know that many foster carers.
I think we've got excessive 24-year-old, who's absolutely amazing by.
Right, so that's
the youngest that I've ever assessed.
Wow, so that's really interesting. So, I mean, you've been a foster carer now for nearly 20 years. Come on, what's it like?
Well, do you know what? I love fostering.
Yeah.
I've benefited from many people who have done it well. Being surrounded by people, good models, good role models in fostering, and I've seen it done really well. And what I've seen young people stay connected for forever. Yeah. And with ourselves, we've really enjoyed it. I think we've probably only had one or two situations where it just did not work, which is really unfortunate. But we know that fostering works.
Yeah.
I think that's my bottom line.
That's cool.
Fostering can work.
As you're talking, I was thinking that, because I know I've met some young people who fostered, and wonderful young people, and I had tea with one of them. But what I do know is that you often you foster younger children, and sometimes those children move on for adoption. Now I'm aware you're an adoptee, so I kind of see there's all that potential there for all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Or is there? Or am I overthinking that? Or what?
No. I think you're overthinking it, because I totally don't get it. I don't get it. For me, I mean, I remember years ago thinking that I didn't expect to get married at 19. I didn't expect to have children and, you know, have a life plan. And it did. That's how it worked out. But I remember being quite young, probably in my late teens, early 20s, and thinking, you know, I would have adopted at some point, because I'm adopted, and it's just, you know, it's nice to kind of continue that. But actually, I discovered fostering, and we decided, my wife and I, that we would go down the route of fostering, because we wanted to have a small but significant influence on the life of as many
more
many young people. You know, I remember watching a programme about a foster carer who lived somewhere outside London and had gathered together, I think it was 200 young people, all the people that moved through her house. And it was a big celebration of her 20, 30 years in fostering. And there's just something remarkable about this big family experience. And so I kind of, from a very early age, thought, do you know what, I want to have loads of people connected. But now, and we always fostered teenagers for about 14 years or so, doing sort of 15, 16 plus. But recently we've been doing babies and preparing them for adoption. And there is something just remarkable about being able to be a part of that transition, be a part of that journey. Not only instilling in young people, in the children, the foundation of their life.
Yeah.
Everything from, you know, from their development milestones to their first words to.
Yeah.
And we use sign language and teaching them communication before they can speak. And there's some real joys about being able to master craft.
You're grinning.
So yeah, I'm loving it. But the actual connection to adoption, it's strange because I don't associate it with myself. It's just.
If it's not there, it's not there. You can't kind of rustle it up, and but you're having these Zen moments. But what I do know, because I think that's a really interesting issue around foster carers and adopters and the relationship, and I see that Twitter very often is is alive with conversations around the experience of adopters with foster carers, mm. and vice versa. That it's not always a great relationship.
No.
Sometimes it's a fantastic relationship. Yeah. I mean, it's reflective of life. There's good and bad. And
awesome.
Lots of
so, yeah.
But it's a really tense time for adopters. And I mean, how have you found that experience?
Yeah. Well, we're quite early into it. I mean, we've had three experiences of it. Although as a social worker, I've sat with a number of foster carers who have done what we're doing, preparing to move children on to adopters, and I've sat in rooms where, you know, clearly they have not liked or gelled with
yeah.
their potential adopter. I think that for a foster carer, you've got an invested interest in that child.
Yeah.
You know that child, and you want the best for that child. And I can imagine that for adopters, I can't imagine how incredibly nervous they must be.
Yeah.
And actually, I've experienced through a child that moved on from us. Sometimes I think adopters can feel quite threatened by
yeah.
foster carers and the relationship that they've built with the child.
Yeah,
and
naturally.
It is our hope that we would be able to stay in contact with the children and move on. But also, as I've sat with foster carers that I've been socially on for and said, you do realise that, you know, in 5 years' time, if you've fostered 6, 7 children, 7, 8 children, move them on to, you know, happy
new families, yeah.
new families. You can't possibly keep in contact with all of them, you know.
Yeah, your address book starts to fill up pretty quickly.
Christmas and birthdays are going to be so expensive. But, you know, in reality of it, you're going to... I always say, this is probably slightly controversial, I've never had anyone disagree with me or not to my face, but as a parent, I believe our role as a parent is to raise, to release our
right.
children. And I see that the same as a foster care, whether you've got them, you know, for a weekend, a week, a year, you're enabling them to move forward,
yeah.
you're raising them to release them. And certainly moving them into adoption, you're raising them to release them
mm-hmm.
into an adopted family, and as an adopter, arguably, you're raising to release them, you know, into independence. You know,
yeah.
The only hope is that they're still friends.
Yeah. It's funny because I was talking to Emma, that's your wife, Emma,
yeah.
and she was saying she's waiting on a call at the moment that will be about the news for the little one
yeah.
and who you're fostering at the moment. And she sort of spoke of this double-edged sword.
Yeah.
The deep joy, but the deep sorrow, the concern and worry and all of those things.
Yeah,
so.
I think the sorrow comes when they move on, but I think the concern is that you're going to like them. Yeah, you must be ill.
If I walk through the door,
we recognise that everyone is dependent, that there's nerves involved. But
yeah.
We want to be able to have some sort of connection with potential adopters.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose what we really want is for them to get us to understand that we've invested so much into the life of this little child, only in preparation to it's not, we don't hold on to them in any kind of way, but we ideally we'd like to be remembered and, if at all possible, stay connected. And I suppose our downside is that we just like making friends. So we kind of like to be friends, but not everyone can sustain relationships. And what I do recognise is that I suppose that as an adopter, you want to, you know, you've waited a long time. It's been a long period that's led
yeah.
to you choosing adoption as an option for you as a life choice. And then you've got the whole assessment process, and then you've got, which I think probably now has got
more or less, yeah.
some disappointments along the way. So there's a whole process that they've been along. But actually, when they do, you know, have the connection, they've got their child, they probably want to just move on. know, and actually
put that boots up behind them.
Option is that it's disconnected in a sense to social services, really, or that arguably, I mean, that's.
No, I think that's fair. As a, the,
so just getting your identity.
Yeah, there's a huge sensation on.
You shouldn't be able to be social media past time. It's a wonderful sensation.
Yeah,
and that's the tension, is that, you know, we often joke that by the time they've got to the garden gate, you open the door and ask them to come back. So that is a, yeah. So yeah, you kind of occupy, you are what you representative of that system, aren't you? You are part of that system to a lot of the doctors.
Yes. I think we'll keep you aware of that.
Yeah, whereas you live within that system, don't you?
We do, yeah, because we are fostering and we're governed by it. And we're both within it. But we also want to be in a relationship.
When people don't reach that standard that you aspire to and it goes wrong, how is that for foster carers? I mean, you'll know it is social worker. How, when this relationships do sour and...
Well, I think that there has to be a measure of, I suppose it's where your expectancy is. I think, as a social worker preparing a foster carer for transition, I think you have to be realistic about the fact that the parent, the adoptive parent, may decide, it's really dependent on contact, the level of contact is all dependent on them.
They hold all the chips, don't they?
They do. And, and in a sense, is it rightfully, really, because they're running with this family. Your role, and I never like to think about foster care as being a job or a role or, essentially, sometimes you have to recognise that you've completed this piece of work.
Job is done.
This time that you've been called for. You've done it and the child has moved on and now you can turn your attention to what's next. If you manage to stay in contact, then that's great. If not, then that was your role in that child's life. And you can remember, you've got history and life story work that you would have kept as part of your own journey as a foster carer. And where you do manage to stay in contact, then that's great. But always it will be their agenda. Their agenda, And, ask me in 5 years' time, are we still in contact with the babies? They're 5, 6, 7 now. I don't know if we will be. Even now, we're recognising that 2 years into an adoption, the adoptive parents of the child he looks after is now reducing what was meeting 4 times a year, which we thought was very social and enjoyable. It's now becoming almost once a year.
And
I suppose that it may at some point become
just a card at Christmas.
Yeah, and we'll have to just accept that.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. I think, your experience of fostering is really broad and expansive, but I'm going to leave it at that because it's really interesting. I think a lot of foster carers and adopters build really good long-term relationships. But it's a huge area of anxiety. I think in those initial days, you walk into someone's house and they know this child like the back of their hands.
Yeah.
And they're watching you bath, maybe, or take them to the park. Huge anxiety.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of emotions involved.
Be kind to your foster care. And be kind to your adopter. I think that's the message.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. And look after yourself.
So that was an interview with Blaine. Again, I apologise for the poor quality of the sound in places and the sounds of me doing washing up and slurping drinks and things. It was a bit poor. I apologise. Shame on me.
Should people pay for this rubbish? I mean, they don't.
No, they don't. So they get what they're given and they have to like
it. No, they don't.
Did you pick up at the beginning?
Although, it's got to be said, Glitter Nails seems to think she does. So,
Top woman.
Yeah, top woman. Top bin, yeah. Anyway, go on, sorry.
No, I was going to say, did you pick up the beginning where he was giving a bit of feedback from the adoptee support group that he facilitates?
Yes, I did. And I thought it was really interesting because I don't think that it was the intent to challenge them, but I'm kind of pleased that they've had that discussion, if that makes sense. Because yeah. I think that a lot of the stuff that they've gone through their journeys actually is still relevant. It really is. And I know you've got some ideas on that. Okay, the kind of experience of why they've been adopted may be different, but I think they've still got a lot to give.
Yeah, in terms absolutely.
Of the future for adoption, I really do.
Absolutely. I mean, again and again and again, the issues I come back to are we don't hit, those are the voices we really struggle to hear again and again. And the book I was reading, the book I was reading that got me, made me ever so cross, that bounced off the pages, that those voices were again were just not as loud and not as common and not as just not as prevalent as I want them to be. So we who have a voice, we need to work harder to give them a voice, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Definitely. But I'm really chuffed that it's caused discussion within them. You know, if it kind of makes them more inclined to think about it and think about, I don't know what they can give to our children as they are in terms of their experience. So being able to take to be able to talk honestly and candidly about their experience of things like identity and, you know, what life story work would have meant to them and, you know, all that sort of stuff. That can only help because they've experienced it, they know what it's like. And to get that from a 7 or 8 year old is very difficult. And we need that. We definitely need that. We need that conversation to happen, regardless of whether they're 40 or 60.
No, and their views on across their lifespan of their thoughts around their own parents, those who've gone looking, those who haven't, those who've tried and failed, and those who what does that mean? How's that influenced their lives? And what can they share that may help my children? You've given me thoughts. I should ask Blair if they would talk to us. Maybe I should ask that question.
No, it's very, very, that is a very interesting.
So back to foster care. I'll drag us back on track.
Yeah.
Blair's a great foster carer, and I don't say that kind of just to butter him up.
Do you surprise visits to him?
I don't do surprise visits. He invited me round for my tea, and I had pasta with a young child he was fostering. That was fantastic, and then we had a little chit chat. What I found from Blair was really interesting. That perspective that he helps, that he has moved children on to adopters, and I think that's a crossover point for us as a podcast and as individuals, isn't it? We both sat on the other side of the fence. I mean, we've both taken children, and we've both adopted, taken children, that's a bad word, we've both adopted children and had the experience of that transition from foster care to our care. I'm happy to talk about my experience. What was your experience? Was it a positive, negative, mixed?
Yeah, I would love to say it's been really successful and positive, but sadly it wasn't. It was very negative once a boy, all three boys actually, so that's two placements from two different foster carers, and sadly there was allegations made by the by all three boys,
right?
So it's been really, really hard to continue on with any kind of relationship, given that, you know, because allegations, you know, we've all been in that position where we've wondered what would happen if a child ever made an allegation against us, and to be really difficult. But I guess for the sake of the kind of children, and, you know, they were involved in this conversation as well, we decided with them that it wasn't really the best idea to continue on with any meaningful relationship.
It's really hard,
which I find
it?
Really sad, because I know how important it is. You know, they were hugely difficult, and it's really difficult to talk about, actually, because I'm looking back into the past. But actually, you know, if I think about some of the comments I've seen around, you know, foster carers being an important part of the child's future, it's creation is not necessarily something I agree with. It's a really difficult one to kind of get my head around.
Yeah, I look back on my, because like you, two of my children, we were foster carers for. But for our first three, I kind of look back with a sense of guilt, really, because I think we just took the advice of our social worker, which was make a clean break, move on, get on with your lives. And the foster care, you know, and part of the reason was that there was a really good bond, so we didn't want to murky that water. And you go, at that time, we just did what we were told, and look back and go, well, that's stupid. That's a really good bond. That's a really important person. We could have managed that really differently. And so I feel bad for how we managed that relationship. With Peanut, we had, by then, we were just jaded by the whole experience of social care. So we just didn't do anything that any social workers told us, because we just felt, actually, we knew what was wrong for Peanut.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, so we've maintained that relationship, because actually we feel really comfortable that our daughter knows who we are, and we feel really comfortable the idea that children can hold lots of adults in their mind and adjust them to the right spot. And we didn't feel it. We had no insecurity whatsoever, because we kind of, by then we'd had 5 adopted children. Blimey, we kind of knew what we were good at, and we knew we were confident. So that really helped that experience. So it was really positive. But I mean, like you, do you hear a lot of stories about the challenges that people have during that moment of transition?
I think that some of it is about, and this is no disrespect to social workers at all, but I think this feeling of a placement breaking down.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm right in saying that, because I think that is the biggest fear of any social worker, that they've been, you know, they're really hopeful of this being the forever family or the adoptive family, or whatever they word it like these days. I just think there's this huge fear, and they're so worried about, you know, visiting or seeing a picture drawn for or whatever from foster care, that actually if it was managed correctly, this is my own opinion now, it's not based on any evidence or anything like that, but I just feel that if there's a natural process where, oh well, you know, we'll see them once a fortnight or once a month. We were very naughty from the very first placement, because actually, even in terms of family, introduce our boys, because they were much older, they were 7 and 8, nearly 8 and 9, to our extended family, because they asked almost from the when are we going to meet this person, when are we going to meet that person.
Yeah.
But I just think that, you know, it could be done so differently, and I think that it's a challenge actually. I don't think challenge works every time, but I think that, you know, you're instinctive throughout your introductions, because I always felt that it was amazing how quickly, even though it's just 2-3 week periods, how quickly you can get to know the information you get from the social worker, the foster care, and then you spend time with that child in a very anxious state for everybody, not just the child. You can actually, I think you can get a lot from that, and actually, you know, instinct's a really good thing.
Yeah, we had a dilemma,
and I
because
don't see why it should be, you know, don't speak to the foster care for 6 months, you know.
Yeah, you've raised a really interesting point, because I think that for us, our first experience of adoption is when the minute the children came home, we shut the door behind us and we let nobody in, and that was what we were told to do. But when Peanut came, we thought, well, that's just mad. Peanut was joining a household of 8, so it's a busy house. So what we said was, like, let's just make this really clear, that either Paul or I would do the basic care functions, the bathing, the washing, the changing the nappies, the feeding, we would do them. And I was quite strongly criticized by a social worker that I was not involved in the case, but who was around me at the time. I'm being very delicate. And I said, oh, my mum's coming over this weekend to meet my new daughter. And she went, but she only moved in, Peanut moved in on a Friday, and my mum came on the Saturday, and she said, but it's only meant to be close family and friends. I went, well, she is. And, you know, we've got a busy household, it's my mum. And actually, we made sure we did those primary things, and our house is always going to be busy. And she's worked it out.
Yeah.
And Peanut, little rascal. I say to her now, who's your favourite dad? And she says, Ginger. That's her older brother. So, oh, fantastic. And she laughs now, but at the time, and she was frightened of him when she first met him. He's got a big ginger afro. He's quite a scary young man. So it's, but you think, actually, children, they can adjust, they can make sense of all this. We were the key people, like you were. We're ranting now, aren't we?
And also, you know, no, we're not, because I think that there's a lot in this. And the other thing is, and so what are you doing? You're moving a child from an environment where they feel reasonably comfortable, or however long, and then you move them to this solitary confinement of just these two people. I mean, how is that any good for a child? And, you know, when Jacob came along, obviously the boys were teenagers, their friends were in and out and in and out and in and out. How are we supposed to protect him from that? And similar to you, you know, we were the ones that put him to bed. We were the ones that made sure he showered. We were the ones that laid his clothes out. So we did all that kind of basic care stuff that you would expect in terms of passion, bonding and what have you. But we couldn't stop the boys' friends knocking or coming in, and, you know, we had to
get
revision sessions and all that sort of stuff. And exactly. So, you know, you can't, and I think that's one of my criticisms about kind of early placement, is the change. I know that you have to bond, and you know, attachment is really important. We believe that every child is going to attach, because you know, I'm going to be controversial here and say a lot of them don't, and you know, nothing that you can do really in introductions in terms of keeping them away from maybe a, you know, an aunt or an uncle, you know, it's not gonna, that's not, yeah, that's not gonna, you know, that's not gonna make any difference, is it?
No, it's
anyway,
not.
I am ranting now. I feel like
no, I think that there's a lot ranting. Of
it's got my box, it's got salt written on the side of it.
Oh, the blood's up. I do think there's a lot of I think there's a lot of dogma. I feel like there's a lot of dogma around adoption.
Yeah.
That we've done it or always done it this way. This is the perceived wisdom. But I think, but I also see good practice as well. So I'm not, I don't think that's,
yeah, of course.
It's
yeah.
not fair. It's not fair to kind of label all social workers so, and foster carers and adopters no. the same thing. Because I also see, you know, I see all no. kinds of interesting things. It's, yeah. Well, hey, we've done.
Have you
I think,
hear more about the bads?
Well, yeah. The bad's more interesting as well, isn't it? Usually. It's much more juicy and salacious.
Yeah, well, that's it. Exactly.
Yeah. yeah. But,
and anyway, like you say,
we've done it to death. We haven't. It's a rich vein. It's our. Is that our first full podcast on foster care where we've just talked about adoption? No, I don't know. Right.
I don't know.
I don't know. So, have you got a busy week planned ahead?
Yes, another busy week.
Oh, that reminds me. How could I forget? How remit of me. Remiss of me, sorry. The word on the street is there is a new chief at Adoption UK. Tell me everything you know.
No, there isn't.
You're the last to find out.
I almost was. Well, no, I wasn't actually, but I was on holiday when the news took place, sadly. And I would have had the opportunity to meet. The announcement was made, and the appointment was made, should I say. Anyway, that aside, yes, we do have a new chief executive officer for Adoption UK, and she will be getting work on the 5th of June. And her name is Sue Armstrong Brown. Fred. Al is her name.
No, I am recording this. You be careful.
Excuse me.
And so, do we know anything? Do we know anything about this Sue Armstrong Brown?
We do. We know a couple of things. We know that she's been in the charitable sector for the last 25 years, I think it is. I'm sure I'll be sacked if that's wrong, and it's only 5 years. But I'm sure it's 25 years. She's done some work for the Green Alliance, I think it is.
Oh.
And yeah, so she's one to definitely keep an eye on, I think. And I like I say, I haven't met her, but all my colleagues who have met her are very, very impressed. And I'm really hopeful that it will be a huge success when she joins.
Well, that's a very positive note, and I'm sure it will be too.
Yeah. I'm sure it will. I mean, Mr. Thornbury did out her on Twitter yesterday by congratulating her publicly for the first time. Now, I've known for last week or so, but you know, obviously can't do anything until it's announced.
I've had an inspired moment.
I'm sure her Twitter following has gone up overnight.
Yeah, I followed her, but she didn't follow me back, so that's her off my Christmas card list.
No, and she won't.
Now we're at the end of the podcast. I've got a new feature. It's called What's You Up To Now? What's You Up To Now? Do you like it?
I love it.
So tell
He's
me.
He's actually posted a photo on a film on Instagram today.
And what was Hugh up to now, Scott?
Well, because Hugh, I did briefly chat to him, not through voice chatting, through text chatting, because I needed some advice on a small matter with him. But yes, he's taken back to mountain climbing or hill walk. No, yeah, mountain climb on top of his cycling. And he's been baking lots of bread.
So we've got three facts from Hugh.
That's what he's doing now.
He's mountain climbing,
oh, yeah.
riding his bike, and
yeah.
baking.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I
he
can't
is.
Wait
he's
for another...
He's a perfect housewife.
He is, isn't he? He's going to make someone a lovely wife. I can't believe I've said that. Oh, that's the end of my career. Just all flesh before me. Oh, my goodness. I didn't mean that. He's going to make someone a lovely partner. Yeah. An equal... Oh, just shut up. Anyway, I'm what I think.
Shut up now. Yeah.
Shut up now. I can't wait for the next episode of What's You Up To Now.
I know. Yes.
I know. I'm gonna
amazing stuff.
I'm gonna troll the internet to see what it's doing. Anyway, I'm gonna let you go. It's been great to talk to you, and I shall look forward to speaking to you soon.
No props. Take care.
Cheers. Bye bye.